Chapter 35. Summer knew that they were at least 20 minutes from filing through the iron ring, and that there would have to be another way to free her brother. Abandoning Dirk, she dove to the cavern floor, searching and groping for another tool or device, anything that would help break the manacle. But the flat, sandy bottom yielded nothing, just the row of mooring weights, one after the other. Kicking ahead with one hand guiding along the blocks of concrete, she touched a large chunk of concrete that had broken off one of the weights when it had been dropped too close to another. Gliding beyond the debris, she reached the last block where she felt something flat and squishy like soggy leather fall away in her hand. A harder piece beneath it was narrow and curved, which she identified as the sole of a boot. A stick leaned against it, which she started to grab, then let go in horror. It was no stick, she could tell, but the femur bone of a skeleton that was still wearing the boot. Another victim of Kang's savagery, the corpse had long ago been left chained to the anchor. Recoiling, she turned to swim back towards Dirk and bumped her head square into the fallen chunk of concrete. The broken piece was roughly square-shaped, weighing about 90 pounds. She surveyed the block with her hands to get around it, then hesitated. It might be the answer, she decided, and was the best she could do under the circumstances. Kicking up for a quick breath of air, she dove back down and muscled the block off the floor and up to her chest. On dry land, she would have struggled mightily to lift the heavy weight, but underwater, the block was more yielding. Moving quickly, she shuffled down the row of weights to her brother, fighting to keep the chunk balanced. Feeling rather than seeing Dirk, she turned and backed into her brother, pushing his body away from the block that held his left wrist. She noted apprehensively that his body gave way rather limply, unlike his normal stone-like stature. Lining herself up with the mooring weight as best she could, she took a step and lunged forward, throwing herself and the broken chunk of concrete at the iron ring. In a slow-motion haze, Summer floated through the water with a slight ripple before the effects of gravity took over. But her timing was perfect. In the fraction of a second before her forward momentum was replaced by sinking gravity, the concrete chunk hit home on the iron ring. An audible clang, muffled by the water, told Summer that she was on target as she let go of the block. The rusty mooring ring, weakened just enough by the frantic filing, succumbed to the weight of the blow and snapped neatly off the anchor. Summer immediately grabbed Dirk's arm and felt down to the wrist, which now dangled loosely. In a burst, she pushed her brother to the surface, took a deep breath of air herself, then towed his limp body to a small rock ledge, pulling him up and out of the water. She knelt by his side to administer CPR when his body suddenly stirred, his head turning to one side. With a groan, he expunged a small flood of water from his mouth and replaced it with a heaving lungful of air. Rising unsteadily to his elbows, he turned to Summer and gasped, "I feel like I drank half the river. Remind me to stick to bottled water next time." The words barely gurgled out of his mouth when he leaned over and retched a second time, then sat up and rubbed his left wrist. Eyeing his sister, he was pleased to see she appeared unharmed and in good spirits. "Thanks for pulling me out," he said. "How did you finally get the ring off?" "I found a loose chunk of concrete and flung it against the stanchion. Thankfully, I didn't take your hand off in the process." "Much obliged for that," he muttered, shaking his head. After catching their breath, they rested for nearly an hour, slowly regaining their strength as Dirk purged the remaining water from his lungs, inhaled moments before Summer broke the iron grip that had nearly drowned him. What little sunlight that earlier wafted through the mouth of the cavern had long since vanished with nightfall, leaving them prone in the cave in near total blackness. "Do you know the way out of here?" Dirk asked, once he felt fit to move. "The mouth of the cave is less than 50 meters away," Summer said. "Just a short distance to the east is Kang's dock." "How do we get in here in the first place?" he asked. "A small skiff. I forgot that you slept through the scenic portion of the cruise." "Sorry I missed it," Dirk replied, rubbing a small gash on the top of his head. "We'll have to borrow a boat from Kang if we want to get off this rock." There was a small speedboat tied up behind his floating palace when we came in and docked. Maybe it's still there. If we can untie it from the dock and drift it out into the cove undetected before starting it up, it may buy us some more time. Summer shivered as she spoke, her body feeling the effects of the cool river dousing. Back in the water, I'm afraid. You know the way out, so lead on. Summer ripped the side seam of the silk dress up to her hip to allow more freedom for swimming, then slipped back into the cool, murky water. Dirk followed as they swam and groped their way along the narrow, winding cavern, moving towards a pale gray circular patch of light that faintly shimmered against the surrounding darkness. The murmur of distant voices gave them a momentary pause as they approached the cave's exit. Swimming around a tight bend, the oval mouth of the cavern opened up before them, the night sky twinkling with starlight, while the glittering reflection of Kang's dockside floodlights danced about the water's surface. Dirk and Summer swam silently out of the cavern entrance to a small rock outcropping a few yards away. The algae-slickened boulders afforded a safely concealed vantage point from which they could observe the dock and adjacent grounds. For several minutes, they hung quietly against the rocks, studying the moored boats and shoreline for signs of movement. There were three boats tied up to the floating dock that ran parallel to the shore. Just as Dirk recalled, a small green patrol speedboat was wedged between Kang's large Italian luxury yacht and the high-speed catamaran on which they had arrived. No signs of life were visible on any of the three boats, which were all tied up in a row, bowed astern. Dirk knew that a small, live-aboard crew would be present on the larger vessel. A lone sentry finally emerged in the distance, walking slowly along the shoreline. As he passed under a floodlight, Dirk could clearly see the glint of an assault rifle slung under the man's shoulder. Casually, the guard strode out onto the dock and alongside the three boats, pausing for several minutes near the large yacht. Growing bored, he strode back down the dock and onto shore, advancing along a stone walkway towards the estate elevator, where he deposited himself in a small security station at the base of the cliff. "That's our man," Dirk whispered. "As long as he stays in that hut, his view of the speedboat is overshadowed by the larger boats. Now's the time to steal it, before he makes the next round." Dirk nodded, and the two of them pushed away from the rocks and began swimming silently towards the dock. He kept an eye on the guardhouse while mentally computing how long it might take to hotwire the speedboat's ignition in the dark if the keys weren't conveniently left in the boat. They swam well away from the dock so as not to arouse suspicion until they were directly offshore of the speedboat, then slowly worked their way in towards it. With handcuffs still clasped to their wrists, their swimming motions felt clumsy, but they quietly kept their hands under the water as they stroked. Furtively approaching the dock, they were blocked from view of the guardhouse until they reached the stern of the boat, where they again had a view of the shore. The guard was still in the security hut, where he could be seen sitting on a stool reading a magazine. Using hand motions, Dirk directed Summer to remove the boat's stern line while he would swim forward and take care of the bow line. Moving along the boat's hull, he felt the looming presence of Kang's yacht towering over him as he crossed the smaller boat's bow. Stretching to grab the mooring line in order to pull himself to the dock, he suddenly heard a sharp click directly above him, and he froze still in the water. A spark of yellow light erupted briefly, and in the glow he could see the ruddy face of a guard lighting a cigarette on the fantail of Kang's yacht, no more than 10 feet away. Dirk didn't move a muscle, steadying himself with one hand clasped on the speedboat's prow, careful not to disturb the quietly lapping water. He watched patiently as the red ember of the cigarette rhythmically flared like a crimson beacon as the guard inhaled on the tobacco. Dirk found himself holding his breath, not for himself, but for Summer, whom he hoped would avoid detection at the stern of the boat. The guard fully enjoyed his smoke, pulling at it for 10 minutes before flinging the butt over the railing. The burning stub landed in the water just 3 feet from Dirk's head, extinguishing with a hiss. Waiting until he heard the padded sound of footsteps move away from the railing, Dirk ducked underwater and swam towards the rear of the speedboat. Surfacing just astern of the boat's propeller, he found Summer waiting with an impatient look on her face. Dirk shook his head at her, then quietly pulled himself up the rear transom of the speedboat and peered towards the pilot seat. In the darkness, he could just barely make out the dashboard ignition, which winked back at him void of a key. He slunk back into the water and looked at Summer, then reached for the loose mooring line in her hands. She was surprised when he ducked underwater for a minute, then surfaced empty-handed, expecting that he was going to retie the line to the dock. Pointing offshore, Summer followed his finger and began swimming silently away from the boat. When they were safely out of earshot, they stopped and rested. "What was that all about?" Summer asked with a tinge of annoyance. Dirk described the guard positioned on the stern of Kang's yacht. There wasn't much chance without the starter key. As close as the boats are together, he'd have seen or heard me trying to rummage around hot-wiring the ignition. Chances are there's a guard or two on the catamaran as well. I think we're going to have to settle for the skiff. The small skiff that Kang's thugs had used to ferry Dirk and Summer into the cavern was pulled up onto the shore, adjacent to the dock. "That's awfully close to the guardhouse," Summer noted. Dirk looked ashore, spotting the guard still sitting in the guardhouse, about 20 meters from the skiff. "Stealth it will be," he said confidently. Kicking back towards shore, they swam widely around the docked boats and approached the rocky beach from the east side. When their feet touched bottom, Dirk had Summer wait in the water while he crept slowly to the shoreline. Inching his way out of the water, he crawled snake-like on his belly towards the boat, which was wedged between two rocks about 20 feet from the water. Using the boat as a shield between him and the guardhouse, he burrowed alongside the wooden skiff until he could peer over the side. A spool of line, coiled on the front bench and tied to a small bow cleat, caught his eye. Reaching over the gunwale, he unfastened the line and pulled the coil to his chest, then burrowed backwards over the loose pebble beach to the boat's stern, which faced the water. Running his hand along the top of the transom, he felt a bolt hole for attaching an outboard motor and ran one end of the line through, tying it securely. Scurrying on his belly back into the water, he played out the line until he reached the end of its 50-foot length. Summer swam over, and they huddled together, hunched over in 4 feet of water with just their heads poking above the surface. "We'll reel it in like a marlin," Dirk whispered. "If anybody gets wise, we can duck back behind those rocks by the cavern," he said, tilting his head toward the protruding boulders nearby. Placing Summer's hands on the line, he leaned back in the water and gradually began applying tension to the line. Summer tightened her grip and then threw her weight onto the line as it drew taut. The small boat jumped easily from its perch, emitting a jarring grind as its hull scraped across its rocky berth. They quickly eased off the line and stared towards the guardhouse. Inside, the guard still had his nose stuck in the magazine, impervious to the noise made by the boat. They quietly took up the slack and continued to reel the boat towards them a foot at a time, stopping periodically to ensure they had not attracted any attention. Summer held her breath as the boat approached the water's edge, letting out a long sigh when they tugged it fully into the water, the scraping sound at last ceasing. "Let's tow her out a little further," Dirk whispered, winding the tow line over his shoulder and kicking towards the center of the cove. When they were 100 meters from the shoreline, he tossed the line into the boat and pulled himself over the side, then grabbed Summer's hand and pulled her aboard. "Not exactly a fountain offshore powerboat, but I guess she'll do," he said, surveying the interior of the small boat. Spying a pair of oars under the bench seat, he popped the shafts into the side oarlocks and dipped the blades into the water. Facing the stern of the skiff, with Kang's compound illuminated in the background, he pulled heavily on the oars, propelling the small boat swiftly into the center of the cove. "It's about a mile to the main river channel," Summer estimated. "Maybe we can find a friendly South Korean naval or Coast Guard vessel on the river." "I'd settle for a passing freighter." "Sure," Summer replied. "Just as long as it doesn't have a Kang Enterprises lightning bolt on the funnel." Glancing towards the shoreline, Dirk suddenly detected a movement in the distance and squinted to better see across the water. As his eyes focused, he grimaced slightly. "I'm afraid it's not going to be a freighter offering us the first lift," he said, as his knuckles tightened their grip on the oars. The dockside guard had grown bored with his magazine and decided to patrol the moored boats once again. A fellow guard stationed on Kang's yacht was from a neighboring province, and he loved to harass the man about the lack of attractive women in his home region. Walking towards the dock, he at first failed to take notice of the empty beach, but then tripped as he stepped onto the dock ramp. Grabbing the side rail to steady himself, his eyes fell to the ground nearby, detecting the scarred indentation of a boat that had been dragged across the pebbly beach. Only the boat was gone. The embarrassed guard quickly radioed his discovery to the central security post, and in an instant, two heavily armed guards came running from the shadows. After a brief but heated exchange, several flashlights were produced, their yellow beams rapidly waved in a chaotic frenzy about the water, rocks, and sky in a frantic search for the missing skiff. But it was the guard on the stern of Kang's yacht who located the two escapees. Shining a powerful marine spotlight across the water of the cove, he pinpointed the small white boat lurching across the waves. "Not a good time to be in the limelight," Summer cursed as the rays of the distant searchlight fell over them. The clattering burst of an assault rifle rattled across the water, accompanied by the whistling of bullets that raced harmlessly over their heads. "Get down low in the boat," Dirk commanded his sister as he pulled harder on the oars. "We're out of accurate firing range, but they could still get off a lucky shot." The small skiff was just midway across the cove, and Dirk and Summer would be sitting ducks for a gunman in Kang's speedboat, which could be on them in a matter of seconds. Dirk silently hoped and prayed that nobody would notice the boat's stern line as they rushed to chase after them. On shore, one of the guards had already jumped into the green speedboat and started the motor. Tong Ju, awakened by the gunfire, burst out of his cabin on the catamaran and began barking inquiries at one of the guards. "Take the speedboat. Kill them if you have to," he hissed. The two other guards scrambled into the speedboat, one of them casting off the bowline as he jumped aboard. In the rushed moment, none of the men noticed that the stern line was dropped over the outboard side. The pilot only saw that the lines to the dock cleat were free. As the boat drifted clear of the dock, he jammed it into gear and pushed the throttle all the way to its stops. The green boat surged forward for a split second, then mysteriously stopped dead in its tracks. The engine continued to scream with a whine, churning at high RPMs, but the boat sat drifting lazily. The confused pilot pulled back on the throttle, unsure of what was causing the lack of forward motion. "Idiot!" Tong Ju screamed from the deck of the catamaran with uncharacteristic emotion. "Your stern line is caught in the propeller. Put someone over the side to cut it free." Dirk's handiwork had paid off. Diving under the speedboat, he had tightly wrapped the stern line around the propeller and its exposed shaft, clogging its ability to spin freely. The heavy hand of the pilot on the throttle had only served to wind the line tighter, spinning it up and into the drive shaft, coupling in a laborious mess. It would take a diver 20 minutes to cut and yank free the mass of coiled rope embedded in the drive line. Realizing the speedboat's predicament, Tong Ju burst into the cabin of the catamaran's pilot. "Start the engines. Get us underway immediately," he barked. The groggy pilot, clad in a pair of red silk pajamas, nodded sharply and made his way quickly to the wheelhouse. 3/4 of a mile away, Dirk grunted as he pulled another stroke of the oars, his heart pounding fiercely. His shoulder and arm muscles began to burn from the strenuous effort to propel the skiff faster, and even his thigh muscles ached from pushing against the oars. His tired body was telling himself to slow the pace, but his mental will pushed to keep rowing with all his strength. They had gained a few precious minutes by sabotaging the speedboat, but Kang's men still had 2 more boats at their disposal. In the distance, they could hear the deep, muffled exhaust of the catamaran as its engines were started and revved. As he rowed in a controlled rhythm, Summer helped guide him through the inlet they approached at the far end of the cove. Kang's compound and boats suddenly drifted from view as they began threading their way through the S-curved inlet. "We've got maybe 5 minutes," he exhaled between strokes. "You up for another swim?" "I can't exactly glide through the water like Esther Williams with ease," she said, holding up the two handcuffs that dangled from her wrists. "But I can certainly do without another dose of Kang's hospitality." She knew better than to ask whether Dirk was up for a strenuous swim. Despite his exhausted state, she knew her brother was like a fish in the water. Growing up in Hawaii, they swam in the warm surf constantly. Dirk excelled at marathon swimming and routinely swam 5 mile ocean legs for pleasure. "If we can make it to the main channel, we may have a chance," he said. The inlet grew dark as they made their way past the first bend, and the lights of Kang's compound became shielded by the surrounding hills. The otherwise still night was broken only by the faraway sound of the catamaran's 4 diesel engines, which they could detect were now throttled up. Like a machine himself, Dirk rhythmically tugged at the oars, smoothly dipping the blades in and out of the water in a long, efficient stroke. Summer acted as coxswain, offering subtle course changes to guide them through the channel in the shortest route possible, while offering periodic words of encouragement. "We're coming up on the second bend," she said. "Pull to your right and we should clear the inlet in another 30 meters. Dirk continued his even stroke, easing off the left oar with every third pull to nose the bow into and through the bend. The beating drone of the catamaran's engines grew louder behind them as the speedy boat ripped across the cove. Though his limbs ached, Dirk seemed to grow stronger with the approach of their adversary, propelling the small boat even faster through the flat water. The ebony darkness softened around them as they rounded the last bend of the inlet and rowed into the expansive breadth of the Han River. Patches of starry lights twinkled across the horizon, shining from small villages scattered along the river and hillsides. The faint lights were the only clue to the river's width, which stretched nearly 5 miles across to the opposite shore. In the late hour of the night, traffic on the river was almost non-existent. Several miles downstream sat a handful of small commercial freighters, moored for the night while waiting to traverse the Han to Seoul at first daylight. A brightly illuminated dredge ship was slowly making its way upstream nearly across from Dirk and Summer, but was still some 4 miles away. Upriver, a small vessel with an array of multicolored lights appeared to be moving down the center of the river at a slow pace. "Afraid I don't see any passing water taxis," Summer said, scanning the dark horizons. As Dirk tried to row towards the center of the river, he could feel the current pushing them downstream. The river's flow was aided by an outgoing tide that pulled at the remains of the Han River as it dispersed into the dusky waters of the Yellow Sea. He eased off the oars for a moment to survey their options. The dredge ship looked appealing, but they would have to fight the cross-current to reach it, which would be near impossible once they took to the water. Peering downriver, he spotted a small cluster of yellow lights on the opposite shore twinkling fuzzily through the damp air. "Let's try for the village there," he said, pointing an oar in the direction of the lights, which were about 2 miles downstream. "If we swim directly across the river, the current should carry us pretty close. Whatever entails the least swimming." Unbeknownst to both was the fact that the Korean demarcation line ran through this section of the Han River Delta. The twinkling lights downriver were not a village at all, but a heavily garrisoned North Korean military patrol boat base. Any further contingency planning was suddenly dashed by the abrupt roar of the high-speed catamaran as it burst out of the inlet. A pair of bright spotlights flared from beside the wheelhouse, sweeping back and forth rapidly across the water. It would be only seconds before one of the beams fell on the small white skiff heading across the river. "Time to exit, stage right," Dirk said, swinging the boat around so that the bow pointed downstream. Summer quickly slipped over the side, followed by Dirk, who hesitated a moment, flinging a pair of life jackets out away from the boat before he rolled into the water. "Let's angle across and slightly upriver to put as much distance as possible between us and the drifting boat," he said. "Right. We'll surface for air at the count of 30. The clatter of machine gun fire suddenly tore through the night air, while a seam-like spray of bullets slapped into the water a few yards in front of them. One of the spotlights had found the skiff, and a guard opened fire as the catamaran raced towards it. In unison, Dirk and Summer ducked under the water, kicking down to a depth of 4 feet before angling into the current. The powerful flow of the river made them feel like they were swimming in place as they inched their way towards mid-river. Gaining ground upriver was hopeless as the current overpowered them, but it pushed them downstream at a much slower pace than the drifting skiff. The deep pulsations of the catamaran's diesel engines resonated through the water, and they could feel the boat as it approached the skiff. Counting time with each breaststroke, Dirk hoped that Summer would not get separated from him in the darkness. Swimming at night in the black water, the only indication of direction was the tug of the river's current. As he approached the count of 30, he eased slowly to the surface, breaking the water with barely a ripple. Just 10 feet away, Summer's face emerged from the water, and Dirk could hear her breathing deeply. Glancing briefly at each other, then back towards the skiff, they quickly gulped a deep swallow of fresh air and resubmerged, kicking back into the river current for another count of 30. The quick glimpse Dirk made towards the skiff was a reassuring one. Kang's catamaran had barreled in on the skiff from upriver with guns blazing and was now creeping up close to assess the damage. No one on board had bothered to look across the river, assuming that Dirk and Summer were still in the boat. In their brief time in the water, they had already established a separation of nearly 100 meters from the skiff. As the catamaran approached the drifting boat, Tongju ordered his gunmen to cease firing. There was no sign of the two escapees, who Tongju expected to find sprawled dead in the bottom of the bullet-ridden boat. Looking down from the upper deck of the catamaran, Tongju cursed to himself as they pulled alongside and shined a light into the skiff. The small boat was completely empty. "Search the surrounding water and shoreline," he ordered crisply. The catamaran circled around the skiff while the spotlights were flayed across the water, all eyes peering intently into the darkness. Suddenly, a gunman on the bow of the catamaran yelled out,
"There, in the water! Two objects!"
he cried, pointing an arm off the port bow. Tongju nodded at the words. "This time they are finished," he thought, with ruthless satisfaction.